Who do you want to be as a leader? What are the blind spots you're missing? If you had a magic wand and you could change anything about your workplace, what would you do with it? These are the kinds of questions we explore on Inspirational Leadership. I'm your host, Kristen Harcourt. I'm a keynote speaker, emotional intelligence coach, and leadership trainer who partners with executives and emerging leaders who want to achieve extraordinary results for themselves and their organizations. You're in the right place if you're ready to cultivate the self-awareness to be the leader you were born to be. Let's go on this journey together. Welcome to Inspirational Leadership. I'm your host, Kristen Harcourt, and have another fantastic, amazing guest. Kelly L. Campbell, she speaks and writes about trauma, leadership, and consciousness, the new TLC. The author of Heal to Lead, Kelly is a trauma-informed leadership coach to emerging and established leaders who know they are meant for more. Kelly's vision is to empower more than half of humanity to heal its childhood trauma so that we may reimagine and rebuild the world together. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi, Kristen. It's so good to be here and it's so good to see you.
I read that last sentence in my heart when I first saw this in your bio. Yes. As a starting point, Kelly, I would love for our audience to get to know a little bit more about you and your journey and what got you to this work that you're doing in the world.
Well, it's been a very interesting journey, definitely one that's taken a lot of twists and turns along the way. But when I first started my career, I started a company. I think I lasted about a year and a half in corporate America. I started my company when I was about 22 years old. I had no idea what I was doing, as most 22-year-olds don't. Yeah. But I guess I just saw a lot of inefficiency inside of that short-lived corporate job. And I started a digital marketing agency where we focused on nonprofits and foundations and social impact initiatives. So essentially like a cause marketing agency. And it felt really aligned with my purpose and my values and, you know, what I wanted to do and be supporting in the world. And I had that organization for about 14 years. I sold it when I was 36. And I think, you know, I sort of groped my way along those 14 years, learning lessons and probably making the same mistake more than once. I learned a lot about leadership during that time, but I had never once considered why I became a leader or how my past was actually impacting my present leadership style. Yes. And maybe it was because that was not verbiage that was available to me. Maybe I was not self-aware enough at the time. It was just, maybe I didn't have the time and the space to think about these things. But after selling the organization, really out of a burnout, right? Really out of a place of, I physically cannot do this anymore. Yeah. I spiraled for a short while, about 6 months or so. I was really depressed. I sort of saw myself as unemployable, if I'm being honest. You know, who wants to hire a 36-year-old CEO who may, you know, sort of know everything and want to run things their own way? I had invented that story about myself. Mm-hmm. I also had a non-compete because of the acquisition, so I couldn't really do much. I was sort of, you know, shackled in that way. And so I had no idea what I was going to do. So I ultimately decided to go into consulting, as most people do in that situation. And it was fine, right? I was doing good work. I was making a ton of money. And I also knew on a soul level that that was not it for me. Mm-hmm. But what I did start to recognize was the conversations I was having with my clients started leaning into conversations about mental health. And I started putting dots together about how the leaders were showing up and how the employees didn't feel safe and, how that was impacting culture, all of these things. And fast forward, I thought, well, this is actually what's lighting me up. This is really where I really want to lean into. And so I got certified as a trauma-informed leadership coach, and I've been doing that work ever since. And that really, like every single thing, the totality of almost from the day I was born until about today is really, you know, culminates in this new book that's coming out in a few weeks. So yeah, not a linear path, but you know, healing is not a linear path either. So.
No. And I think first of all is letting everybody know, I think there is this belief sometimes that it's supposed to be linear and it zigs and it zags and you can get to a stage and then look back and say, oh wow, that all made sense. But that's because it's easier to be able to go look back. But when you're in it, you don't necessarily know. And I believe as I was hearing you say that, you weren't meant to know yet, right? Like that was the journey. You get to that place. And as you start to check in with yourself and notice what feels aligned and what doesn't feel aligned, and perhaps even ask those questions, you might not have been getting into your body and tuning in and really asking the big questions around what does my soul crave at that stage in that season of your journey.
Yeah, exactly. So there was just so much that felt so new after I sold that company.
Yeah.
You know, it felt a little bit like an ego death. It felt a little bit like a spiritual awakening. It felt really heavy. Yeah. And then when I started to delve into things that I had never, you know, questions I had never asked myself, to your point, you know, what is my purpose here? What am I great at? Where can my expertise and my experience culminate to help others? Yeah. I had never asked really questions like that before.
Yes.
And I wanted something that was more aligned with my own values, and those values and the clarity around that impact, integrity, et cetera, has gotten more honed and more defined, you know, ever since selling that company.
I just, as you started talking, I could just see, because I remember the first time I talked to you, I immediately within 30 seconds connected with you. I think I connected before I even got to meet you, but I hear you saying values, right? Impact, same as my value, integrity, authenticity, like we have so many of the same values, those guiding principles. And I think that's such an important piece that you're noticing just right there too, right? Like a lot of people have never taken a step back and started to ask themselves, what are those core values and those guiding principles? And all of a sudden it starts to make so much sense around those times where things didn't feel right because that alignment wasn't there, or why there's this aliveness and energy that comes when you're really, really living and breathing those values.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more that I have understood embodiment and somatic work and, you know, everything that comes along with my trauma-informed leadership coach training, I apply those things to myself, you know, and we also know that like healing in general, especially trauma integration is not, I mean, it's lifelong. This is not like a one and done, find the silver bullet modality or two or three. It's lots and lots of different inputs and lots of self-reflection and lots of work internally. Sure, there can be support from the external, but yeah, it's a lifelong commitment. And so I think the more that I embody those things and the more that I have my own practice, the more that these things come alive and get clear. And I think most of us, that's what we actually want is clarity.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And so tell me a little bit more around those times where I was saying just before we went on to the show, it's you're birthing a book baby and it's huge. It's amazing when you feel that calling. So first of all, I'm curious around what made you feel like this is the time and the moment that I need to get this book out. And then let's talk more about the book.
So it's interesting. I didn't have this is the moment.
Yes.
For the book.
Yes.
5 years ago, I started writing this book, Kristen.
Wow.
And 5 years ago, I didn't start writing this book. I started writing what I thought was my first book. Mm-hmm. And then I had this beautiful serendipitous moment where I met someone who said, can I read this manuscript that you've kind of put together? And I had very little at the time, but I had enough to show somebody.
Yes.
And she read it and we got on a phone call and she said, you know, I'm just going to tell you my thoughts, like unfiltered, which, you know, at least she gave me a little bit of a heads up.
Yes.
And she said, what you're writing is not your first book. What you're writing is maybe your third book. But in this book that you've written, this manuscript or this draft, you are not present. Your voice is not here. And for a first book, I need to hear your voice.
Mm.
She said, so I don't want you to delete it, but I want you to put it aside and start from scratch. And I think at that point I had been working on it for about 2 years. And so panic, panic set in. And she said, I'm going to ask you a question. And we were on the phone at the time. She didn't do Zoom.
Yeah.
And she said, I want you to close your eyes. And she asked me this question. She said, when was the first moment you recall stepping into a leadership role? And I don't know if it was because my eyes were closed or we were on the phone, but the very first memory that came in was sitting in the back seat of my family car. It was a white Crown Victoria.
Yes.
And I was sitting in the back with my younger brother, who's about 13, 14 months younger.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was driving us to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And she parked the car and she turned around and she told my brother and I that my father was not going to be living with us anymore, that he was leaving for an indeterminate period of time.
Yeah.
And then she very quickly ushered us into the movie theater where we went and watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh.
Like the irony of it, right?
Oh.
But that was the moment. And what's interesting is that I had never thought about that particular scene ever since it happened.
Wow.
But for whatever reason, this question put me right back into that back seat, because in a moment when I was kind of confused and angry and panic stricken and felt like I was actually in danger because my mother was actually quite abusive, and now my father was not going to be in the house anymore, I turned to my brother and made sure he was okay. Right. Which also meant a lot of emotional suppression for me at the time.
Yeah.
But that was the first moment where I was like, oh, was that courage? Right. And so when I told this to the woman who was coaching me about the book, she said, congratulations, you just wrote the introduction to your book. And I was like, what? That's how this works? That's what you want me to write about? I was, you know, and so that really, I count that as the beginning of this book.
Yes. As I was, I mean, I was right there with you. I was in the car as you were just sharing that story and being part of that moment. But absolutely, because people, through you sharing your powerful story, doesn't matter, somebody isn't going to have that same story, but through them hearing that, it's so interesting. Just as you did that right then too, I was remembering, oh, because then I started thinking that movie and that age and what was going on. And so I can see how, as you're sharing that story, people are going to be able to connect and ask themselves some of those bigger questions, which is powerful. And I think says so much of the incredible transformative power of storytelling, because it helps us to emotionally connect in that way, viscerally as well, right? Not just with the head. Like, I dropped down immediately as you started to share that story. And so you started to recognize, okay, this is where we're going. This is the story. And then as this started to become the book that it is today, what did you start to feel most called to share? You know, there's leaders from all over the world that are listening to this podcast right now. What did you want leaders to start to think about in this book?
So, you know, I shared that one story, which is the beginning of the introduction, but then I thought, you know, there are lots and lots of moments where if I looked back at it, they were very formative moments that really created my leadership style. And they were really rooted in traumatic experiences. Mm-hmm. And so I brought some of those into the book. It is not, you know, I didn't over-index on trauma because I also want it to be readable.
Yes.
So there are some poignant things that I did keep in, poignant stories, but then there's a lot of research and there's a lot, I would call the first half of the book making the case for trauma integration as part of the hallmarks of effective leadership. And that is a conversation that no one has been having, not to any scale, at least.
Yes.
And so this felt like, okay, if I'm going to, you know, draw a line in the sand to say, this is where I will stand,
mm-hmm.
probably for the rest of my career, that this, it just feels so clear in my body that like this is probably where my voice is best used. Mm-hmm. So I would say the first half of the book really focuses in on that and the healing journey for individuals. And then the second half of the book is about the rest of these leadership traits, but I would call them the fundamentals. And in the book, I reference them as the four fundamentals of high conscious leadership.
Mm.
So it's, we know what conscious leadership is, right?
Yes.
At least for the last decade, it's been in our lexicon,
mm-hmm.
not in everyone's, but mm-hmm. in the zeitgeist, right?
Yes.
What no one talks about with conscious leadership, though, is we dangle this word in the beginning of self-awareness. And I don't think it's enough because we're not taught inside of that. What does that actually mean? And how do I arrive at increasing my self-awareness? How do I actually do that?
Yeah.
My response to that and what I posit in the book is that it's through trauma integration. It's through healing what you've experienced in the past that is still lingering with you in the present. If you don't address that and take radical responsibility for that, how can you lead anyone else? Because clearly you're not able to lead yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big piece of this. The other fundamentals are embodying vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
leading with compassion, and lighting the way, right?
Yeah.
Those all make sense. Those are things that are just part of conscious leadership. I'm kind of just doubling down on those. The big thing here is the trauma integration.
Yeah, I mean, I see this all the time because ultimately when we start to see these patterns that are not as healthy patterns, if you look back, well, where did this pattern first get developed? And you're starting to look back to these different situations, which can also create limiting beliefs that are creating self-sabotaging behaviors that are not only getting involved in and in impacting the individual and what they actually want to create, but then it's also, of course, you're going to be interacting with a whole bunch of other humans. And then we've got a whole bunch of other humans who are also not integrated. And this is why I say all the time that workplaces are an opportunity for so much healing. I remember back in the day where I started to become very clear of my ultimate calling, which was raising consciousness globally. And then I realized I was called into the workplace. That's where, because it's so funny, because for a while when I became a mom, and all of the work, because I think, or if you, as a mother, I recognize, oh, like my children are here to be my teachers. Like this is all my work to do. So I thought it was going to be on parenting, but no. The universe is like, we're going to pull you in here. There's going to be a lot of these leaders who are parents, but that's not as you're not going in that way. You're going into the workplace, but you see this potential for so much healing because you're interacting with humans all day long. Guess what happens? A lot of friction.
Lots of friction, lots of activation. We're constantly pressing each other's buttons and activating things that we have no idea. They're all pretty much invisible for the most part, right? And we keep doing it. And there's like this repetition, right? There's these repetitive patterns and loops and cycles that we stay stuck in. Yeah. And it's so easy to blame other people or look for what's happening externally. It's very difficult to stop, to pause, to say, wait, you know, where is my part in this? How can I take responsibility for this?
Yeah.
Whatever the conflict is, right? It's interestingly, from an Indigenous perspective, that's the first place they go,
mm-hmm.
right? Where is my responsibility? What harm have I caused? Let me bring that to the table.
Yes.
I think there's so much wisdom in that, but that's not how we operate because we operate on a very egocentric model.
Yes. Yes. And it's so much easier to point fingers out there than to have to take a pause and ask. I think we've talked before around the conscious leadership group where they talk about above the line or below the line, and below the line happening to me, above the line happening by me, which is so much more empowering because it's always to me. It's like, you're just walking around. There's nothing I can do. It's everybody else. Whereas when it's by me, it starts to be, now, again, I want the caveat here is it doesn't mean that other people are not also responsible for their behaviors because there are things that are happening with others. So I just want to make sure nobody interprets that as, oh, no, you just take it and everybody else. No, absolutely not. But what it does do is you start to recognize the more you start to look at those triggers and those times that you're being activated and then get really curious and do some of that inward work. It starts to shift and change everything, but in a powerful way in that now you get to be able to have ownership of what you can and cannot control.
Right.
As opposed to controlling everybody else out there.
Yeah. That's exactly where I was going to go with that. Just to build on that is we do not have control of what anyone else does or says or thinks or how they behave, right? We only have control as to how we do all of those things. And the more centered and the more grounded and the more resourced we are, we can show up in a way that actually might even, you know, influence the people who have not done that work. Maybe even gives them a little bit of permission. I don't love that word, but gives them permission to maybe be more vulnerable or see in themselves, oh, well, you know, Kelly's taking responsibility for their side of the street. I wonder, should I be doing that? Right. Mm-hmm. Even if there's a tiny, tiny little bit that you can influence in the thought change or like a different neural pathway for someone else so that they're not carving the same one. I just feel like as a leader, that's our responsibility.
Yeah. And I've seen it in action so many times, like in terms of those moments where I've stayed grounded and resourced. And because I'm grounded and resourced, I have access to my creative thinking. And in that moment, the next action I take, I remember there was this time where my son was having this huge major meltdown and I was very grounded and centered. I think I had just come back from a yoga class and I was very grounded and centered and very resourced in that moment. And when he was having that, to disrupt it, something in me just said, I'm just going to start singing and I'm going to be crazy in my singing in this moment. And so he immediately stopped. He didn't know what to do with this. He's like, what's going on? But I still to this day, it was so funny because I don't even know where that came from, but it was because I was very connected and grounded. And then I had access to this other, this more creative thinking. And then it gave me, okay, this is just do it. I was being playful and just being present. And that came up for me. So it's incredible what can happen in those moments. I'm curious when I heard you talking also, when we think about being grounded and resourced, because I use that languaging as well. I love it, Kelly. And there's going to be leaders who are listening right now and they recognize, yes, I can start to catch myself when I'm in those reactive moments. But what are some of those tools that I could use to help make me stay more grounded and resourced when I'm starting to go very reactive or get into ego?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many, right? There's a myriad of tools. Yeah. It could be everything from literally just, I mean, again, simplicity. I think in our culture, we devalue simplicity. So yeah. Even something like putting your feet, bare feet or socked feet, if you can, but on the ground and just like connecting for 1 minute and really actually putting your attention to the bottoms of your feet so that you can feel that chi, that life force that's there all the time. But until you put attention to it, you don't realize that it's there. There's breath work exercises that can be done. You can do box breathing, right? Four counts up or however many you want, but four counts in, hold, four counts out, four counts of holding, right? So you can do a box breath. You could do a micro meditation. There are a million different ways and tools and practices that can be used. I always say it's not really a recommendation. It's more what works for you, because what works for me may not actually work for another person, right? Yeah. And the nice thing is that there's no limit. Literally, these things are limitless. There are so many. In the book, I actually have a menu set up literally like a restaurant menu of resources. So it's just publicly available at myhealingmenu.com. Yeah. And that will grow. I mean, I don't know how many are there now, maybe a couple of hundred, but categorized as all of these things from simplistic, maybe there's appetizers, which are, you know, very, very simplistic, maybe a podcast or a book or a meditation or something.
Yeah.
Sharing plates where, you know, you need another person to facilitate this with you. Mm-hmm. Entrees, which are much more somatic, much more expressive types of work. Mm-hmm. And then the desserts, which are more like psychedelics and plant medicines, if those are available to you. So just couching it in these ways and offering, you know, hey, here's the whole menu.
Yes.
Go figure it out, right? Like I say, your course is your choice.
Yes.
There's a lot available out there. I just think people need to get a little bit more curious and see what calls to them.
I think that's really important in terms of it's not a one size fits all, and let it be something where you experiment and explore. And even something that normally works for you that day might not be working as well. So checking in and even noticing, you might find, I know even for me, some days journaling works really well in that moment. I need to just write it out and I release. And then other times I notice when I check in with myself, I don't want to journal. Like I'm resistant to the journal, and that's okay. So it's constantly, I love what you're saying in terms of having a menu. And I think it was quite creative what you did there as well with the way you set up that menu and just noticing like the more you have in terms of the different things you can play with, and the more you allow yourself the opportunity to experiment. And I think sometimes people might even be resistant because they think a certain thing will look or feel a certain way, but you don't know until you try it. It might even be much better than you had anticipated it would be until you try it.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you just said that, because it sparked something for me. You don't know until you try it. I think that there are so many things that we don't do because we're afraid of the perception. We're afraid that we're going to get it wrong. We're afraid it's going to be look weird. I mean, so many reasons, right? Why we block ourselves or stop ourselves from trying something new. But when it comes to healing and integrating trauma, you literally don't know what's going to work for you until you try it, right? So someone might suggest craniosacral therapy. Yeah. Someone might suggest acupuncture. Someone might suggest cold plunge therapy. And these things may seem like, wow, this is really far out, new agey stuff. It's not. Yeah. It's not. And you figure out what works for you. And that's why, you know, there are all of these different modalities. And I'm very grateful that there are so many of them. And I don't have a stake in any of them, right? Mm-hmm. It's like whatever works for you, that's great.
Yes.
I think we said at some point, like the healing journey is not linear. It is a non-linear path, right? So it's going to bend and twist and all of these things. And I think it's important for people to understand, especially if they're new to it, that there is this thing, this concept, called the spiral of healing, right? Mm. So the spiral of healing is that there are lessons and there are things that we are meant to learn in this lifetime. Yeah. Again, that's what I believe. It doesn't necessarily have to be what other people believe, but there are lessons that we are meant to learn on a soul level. And some of what happened during childhood is really set up to help us overcome these things. Integrate them is probably a better word. Yeah. And then throughout life, these things are not, they're not healed. You will never, ever hear me use the word healed, ED, in past tense. If someone says they are healed from something, from a traumatic standpoint, of emotional or psychological trauma, I don't believe it. I don't buy it, because it's never healed. It's that it keeps coming around in different ways, in different forms, to different degrees, and from different angles, so that it's almost like, I don't know, maybe universally you are, someone's making sure that you really are working on it and working every angle so that you're really learning how to grow from it.
Right? Yeah. As you were saying that, to remind me of these times where something will come that I thought I was done with like 7 years ago. Oh, here we go. This one's back again. We got some more work to do here.
Yeah. Something literally just happened in my life in the last couple of weeks. And it was something that activated me so much, because I had not had to encounter that for 20 years. 20 years ago was the last time I had to think about or encounter anything, but man, that thing came around out of left field. And I was like, oh, wow. And here's an opportunity for me to think about this from a much more resourced place. How am I? And I actually had the ability to say, okay, this is happening. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's painful. Mm. How am I going to do it different this time? Right. It's not going to crumble me or cripple me for the length of time that it did 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to feel like this is being imposed on me, mm-hmm. that I'm looking at it through the lens of victimization. Mm-hmm. I was able to see, oh, this, you know, situation, this person, has, you know, wounding. And like, I can actually see from a place of compassion.
Yes.
What the actual situation is. And it's actually not about me. So then the ego dissolves, right? And it's like, oh, this isn't about me. I don't have to take this as such a precious thing. This is a projection of this person's pain. Got it. Okay. Now I can operate, you know, from that place. And that's what I mean by being centered and rooted and grounded and well-resourced. If I had not been doing my work for the last however many years, there is no way I can guarantee you that I would be able to have gotten to that place over the course of a few days.
Right. So you showed up differently, the way you responded to it, how long it took you, because you're going to be into it. And also there's probably a different level, me just knowing you, Kelly, and where you've been on your journey, there's probably a different level of self-compassion and grace for yourself.
Absolutely.
As you're working through it and allowing yourself to be in the messy middle and feeling some of those feelings, and as opposed to suppressing and repressing what you might have done before, or that self-talk could have been not as kind to yourself.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a combination in the past of self-talk and numbing with different substances, you know, the alcohol. Like, I don't want to feel this. So what can I do to avoid it? And I, you know, from a leadership perspective, I feel like so many people are operating from that place. You know, what else can I do to distract myself? Is it retail therapy? Is it, you know, a drink or four every night after work?
Yeah.
No judgment. It's literally just, I see how, you know, those vices or those forms of distraction are keeping you from really experiencing the full spectrum of human emotion,
exactly,
which is, you know, pretty much post-traumatic growth.
Well, and for someone who does so much work around emotional intelligence and emotions, I see that also it can be a little bit sneaky, right? We don't even realize sometimes, because it's been replaced with things like scrolling on your phone, right? It feels like
that's addictive,
healthy, right? Like, I'm totally being, I'm like, no, probably what's going on right there is you don't want to feel what you're feeling, and scrolling for an hour on your phone, it feels like a great distraction from doing that.
It's a great distraction. And it's also, from an addiction standpoint, there's so much dopamine, right? If you're feeling depleted, what you want is serotonin and dopamine, right?
Exactly.
And the phone gives you that, and lots of other things give you that.
Exactly. And let's be honest, there are behavioral psychologists that sat around in rooms creating it to do just that.
That is a whole nother conversation. but yes, the answer is yes.
So this podcast is called Inspirational Leadership. And I'm sure if you were to tell me what an inspiring leader is, there's going to be some compassion and vulnerability in there, which is also part of those. But tell me, when you start to think about organizations and helping to create more conscious leaders who are doing the healing work, what do you want to see more of? I guess I'll do this as a two-part question.
Okay.
Part one is, what do you think, what would you like to see when you start to think of an inspirational leader? In this context, it's those conscious leaders, number one. And then number two, what would you like to see more of in organizations? This could be, you know, how is the organization perhaps supporting creating this kind of environment?
So I think the first part, I don't know if it's actually a two-parter.
I might not be. That's the beauty of it. Maybe not.
It might not be a two-parter, because I see, that's how my brain works. I thread things like instantaneously. I think it's the same answer for me. What I would love to see leaders and organizations doing is leaning into supporting their employees in ways that they have never imagined before. What that could look like is bringing in emotional intelligence coaches, trauma-informed leadership coaches, grief counselors. I mean, you name it, things that have historically not been a part of or attached to the workplace in the past, but would be incredibly supportive to teams, to employees. The more that we lean in, and you know this better than anyone, the more that we lean into supporting our employees in ways that actually matter, not pizza Fridays, not a gym membership, like those are fine, but I'm talking about really, you know, supporting them in ways that will impact their emotional, physical, mental, psychological health, you're only going to see the positive benefits of that long term, right? So these people will be healthier, so they will need less, you know, sick days.
Yes.
Make sure that they are taking wellness days and mental health days with no questions asked. They will feel better about themselves, so they will perform better. They will be more productive. You will have less employee attrition. The work itself will be better.
Yeah.
Clients will be happier. Mm-hmm. The margins will be there, right? Like, I don't understand, honestly, how people don't get this. I think this production mindset, this industrial revolution based in production mindset, where it's like humans, people, workers, let's call them workers, because that's what that mindset is.
Yes.
Workers are replaceable. Let's burn them out until we can replace them.
Yeah.
And like the fact that there's no care for the human who's on that receiving end of that kind of treatment, that continues to boggle my mind.
Yeah.
And I also know that I'm not so naive. I'm a little naive, but I'm also not so naive to know that like it doesn't have to do entirely with money. I get that. Money, power, privilege. I get it. And also, like, what are we doing here? Literally, what are we doing here if we are not leaning in to support each other?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on a whole.
I mean, sister, you know, like we could talk for hours around this piece. I've been talking humanizing work for a long time. And, you know, somebody is going to hear this. And please, like, take this, take what Kelly has shared in terms of, you can go online. There are books that will show all of the science and the data to support that. I don't even know why I need to be saying around data to support this, because you have a whole bunch of humans, and why aren't we creating an environment that supports the humans? However, I get that sometimes an HR leader might be hearing this and saying, well, how do I make the business case? Or a CEO might be hearing this and saying, well, my shareholders just care about profit. So we're here to tell you, guess what? The byproduct of all of this is it will have a huge profit and a huge ROI. That's not what I want you to have the motivation around. I want it to be because you're creating an environment that supports humans.
That's the difference.
Right?
It's the motivation. Thank you for saying that.
That's the motivation. And here's, I've said this a lot, because I also talk about this when people are saying, you know, difficult personalities or people at work. Most people, most people do not wake up in the morning and saying, I want to be a jerk today. Like, I can't wait to go into the office and be a jerk all day long. Most people. So I also know CEOs or HR leader, whoever's listening to this, you know, and in your heart and your soul as well, that this is what you want to do. This is the environment that you want to create. Use your voice, use your skills to advocate for, to make different choices, to make different decisions, to support the people. Because you have a whole bunch of individuals who are spending much time in your workplaces. And ideally, it's a workplace where they get to use their gifts and their talents and get to make an impact. But you also need to take care. You need to have care for those humans in those workplaces and make sure that well-being is a priority. I have to say, Kelly, it's something that I continue to see is organizations that are doing exactly what you're talking about in terms of, we will just do everything we can to get everything we can out of you until you are burnt out, and we will just get the next person.
Yeah.
No, no, no. Like, this is not cool. This is not okay. And this, I really, really firmly believe this needs to shift. And I know my thing around this is, I know there's some really good people that are working in these organizations and just feel like their hands are tied.
Yeah.
But we need to be having a different conversation, that this can't be happening. What are your thoughts on this, Kelly?
Yeah. I have so many. I think that there is this feeling or this thought, this illusion. Let's use the word illusion.
Yes.
There is an illusion that you can't make change, that the system is too big, the company is too big, there's too much red tape. But you have to start somewhere. And I can guarantee that other people inside of the organization feel exactly the way that you do. They want to see the changes that you want made. And so it's about finding your people, finding your allies inside of the organization. You know, it's an interesting thing, because, you know, the leadership team typically is very small. It's the larger organization of people doing the work who actually have the strength in numbers and who have the power.
Mm-hmm.
This is why boycotts and protests work, right? I think that while we want to put the onus on leaders to do better,
mm-hmm.
And I do believe wholeheartedly that it is the responsibility of leaders to work on themselves and then have that ripple throughout the organization.
Yes.
I don't know that it can be only that. I think it's got to be both and. So yes, leadership responsibility.
Yes.
And the employee saying, these are my boundaries. This is what I will accept. This is what I will not accept.
Yes.
Right? And that strength in numbers and all of that. But if you have, ultimately, when you think about it like that, and I'm just saying this off the top of my head, but when you think about it like that, both of those situations, a leader who is actively healing and employees who want better for themselves, they actually have very shared goals, mm-hmm. very shared objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be, and I think that this happens in most organizations where leadership and employees feel like they are at odds. Mm-hmm. It does not have to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the inroads into the conversation about like change and what is possible might be, hey, we actually are on the same team. We do want the same thing. We want to turn out a great service or a great product. And in doing so, we need to be supported as the employees. Yeah. Leader, that's your responsibility to do that. And if you are in any way engaging in not wanting to do more harm in the organization that you are at the helm of,
yeah,
this is how you can help us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I totally, I always approach it with both entrances. And that individual is also getting healing, that employee who might not be a leader, because they're learning how to advocate and speak up and ask for what they want and make sure that their needs are being taken care of, which is contributing to their healing too. But I do say it needs to be coming from both angles. And we don't have to go from A to Z. It's also going from A to B to C to D, right? Start to make small steps, start to make new choices. Kelly, I knew that our conversation, we could talk for hours. But when we start to think about ending today's conversation, I always like to give my guests an opportunity to leave whatever is most top of mind for you in terms of a final thoughts.
Start somewhere. Like, listen. Yes, you've just listened to this whole conversation, which I'm very grateful for. Now go do something. Whether that means going and looking at your insurance plan to see what therapists are in your network, whether that's having a conversation with your spouse or your kids where you take responsibility first, whatever it is, go do something, take some action. Like, maybe this was an inspiring conversation. Maybe this was a little eye-opening. Now, what are you going to do with it? I think because we can listen to podcasts and we can read the books and all the things.
Yes.
Very few of us actually take the action. And I think that is what I would like to leave here.
I love that. I love that. So for everyone listening, what's one commitment you're going to make from this conversation? I say the same thing for the book. When you go and read Kelly's book, you're going to read it once just to go through and read it. Then you're going to maybe do some highlighting, and then you're going to go back and read a second time. And that's when you start to get into the actions. I think so many people will read so many books. You don't even need to keep reading, going to the next book. Read the first book and action everything that you read in the book.
Yeah.
I love that. Kelly, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Kristen. I love this conversation. And you're right. We could, if this went for 3 hours, it would go like that.
I agree completely. And I will have show notes so that everyone, is there anything, I'm going to have everything in the show notes, but is there anything you want to let people know in terms of where they can learn more about the book and your work?
Everything would just be at my website, which is klcampbell.com.
Perfect. Perfect. And for everybody, wherever you are in the world, we're saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening, sending tons of love. Bye-bye. Please remember that meaningful change requires space and grace. Practice self-compassion and become the ripple. As you transform yourself, you transform your workplace and the people around you.